Mr. Speaker.
Order, order.
With the House in the first week of a two-week adjournment, the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee reconvened at Parliament to continue its examination of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement on Tuesday and Wednesday. And as members of that committee listened to one particular submission, they may have been surprised to hear about one of the trade deal's consequences.
It extends to even John Key's Moonbeam's worming medication.
Moonbeam is the Prime Minister's cat, by the way, and more on her medication later. But first, submitter Suzanne Talkington warned the committee about the trade deal's impact on the cost of biologic pharmaceuticals.
We know the TPP will negatively impact the cost of medications through new patent restrictions of biologics. And being the generous souls that they are, the government are going to cover the increased cost of medications. But of course that means the taxpayer will pay. Considering the baby boomer cohort will have retired by 2025, lowering the tax take and raising the costs involved with an ageing population, it doesn't bode well with the government's insistence that all will be fine. Already there are many New Zealanders who require medications that Pharmac cannot or will not cover. And as new and more efficient medications become available, the list of uncovered items will grow. New Zealanders forced to take older, cheaper, inefficient meds.
And that's where Suzanne Talkington cited the Prime Minister's pet cat.
There is another issue concerning the biologic patents that hasn't been widely discussed. Biologics includes more than just human medication. It extends from the face creams to even John Key's Moonbeam's worming medication. Veterinary costs will also be affected, and given New Zealand's love for their pets, this will impact many households. But of a greater financial concern is the cost of biologics in farming industry, an area the government is relying on meeting their rise in GDP. The cost to farmers and growers will be all increased dramatically.
But while Suzanne Talkington claimed costs would increase for the country's growers, the chief executive of New Zealand's Horticulture Export Authority, Simon Hegarty, welcomed the trade deal's broad coverage of his industry.
The full range of fresh and frozen and processed horticulture products are included in it. That's point number one. Point number two, for us, tariffs on this range of products will be removed entirely within 10 to 11 years and save us approximately $42 million annually. The New Zealand export community need to be competitive with other countries. If we were to be excluded, we would continue to incur those annual taxes, or tariffs, and they would not be faced by our direct competitors. So we'd quickly erode any competitive position we had relative to our competitors across the Tasman or Chile, for example.
Mr. Hegarty said that would prove positive for the whole economy.
This deal helps to provide confidence to invest in our future, and I think we've all got an interest in that. Individual growers, exporters, service sector, they all need some degree of certainty about the ongoing opportunities, and so investing in with confidence in those industries will benefit the wider New Zealand economy, both in urban and regional areas. It'll improve the economic prosperity and societal development, provide future opportunities, employment and diversification of our economic base.
Meanwhile, though, Suzanne Talkington had done some homework on the government's stated benefits of the TPP for exporters.
They tell us the big earners are forestry, farming, fruit and vegetables and wine. But I question just how wise the government is on this. On the 2nd of March this year, the Minister announced in the House that things were going well for New Zealand over the TPPA and we would be exporting new products under it, including avocados to Mexico. A somewhat interesting claim considering that Mexico produces 4.5% of the global export trade in avocados. It has a year-long growing season. Due to the USA banning avocado exports from Mexico a few years back, it has resulted in the Mexicans having to dump tons of the product each year. I guess there's only so much guacamole you can eat. But the government would like us to believe that there is a great profit to be made by us selling avocados to Mexico under the TPP. I guess next they'll be suggesting they send Lord to teach the words to the La Paloma.
And from Suzanne Talkington to Susan Cullen, Vice President of the Māori Party, and this submission on the TPP.
Essentially, the Māori Party is not anti-trade, but we are pro Te Tiriti or Waitangi, essentially around concerns for the engagement with Māori in terms of defining the bill and the way in which Crown consult. and engage with Māori. So the Māori Party believes that the government should conduct a review of its international treaty-making procedures generally, as well as specifically review its processes for engaging with Māori.
Māori Party Vice President Susan Cullen. And there will be more submissions on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement next week with the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee meeting back at Parliament on Wednesday and Thursday. And while MPs on that committee were hard at work hearing evidence on the TPP, some of their colleagues were travelling with the Speaker, David Carter, on the annual delegation to visit other parliaments and parliamentarians. This year they are in Latin America, visiting Mexico, Chile and Argentina. They left on Tuesday and will return to Wellington on Friday in time for the start of the next sitting period on Tuesday week, May the 3rd. As has happened in past years, their travel has been labelled a junket by the media and even by one of their fellow MPs, the ACT Party's David Seymour. But as Tom Fruin discovered when he talked to Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows, who was on last year's trip, the MPs on the delegation and their colleagues on the Foreign Affairs Committee were both involved in advancing New Zealand's overseas trade prospects.
You don't like the description speakers tour, you prefer delegation. Why?
Because delegation has got a purpose to it and a tour is just a look around. So I think it's important to make that difference. The fact is that when the Speaker gets a myriad of invitations each year as to where he could go, he may approach his Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade and ask where it would be the most helpful for the delegation to go, and then takes that lead. So in the case of the delegation to Europe last year, we went there in mind of wanting to achieve, or you know, wanting New Zealand to achieve a free trade agreement with Europe. It was raised on every occasion. That was the every discussion we had was focused on agriculture and trade and towards getting a free trade agreement. So, you know, that there is a purpose to a delegation as opposed to a tour.
The people who come to visit us, what are they looking for?
This is something that a lot of people don't understand, in that we have visits probably about one every fortnight, comes to New Zealand to look at our parliament, not our government. So they don't come here to see the Prime Minister. They come to see the Speaker of the House and to learn about select committee processes and the way we run our democracy, because New Zealand has the longest universal suffrage uninterrupted democracy on the planet, pretty much. And they are coming to look at the way we do that. We live in one of the most democratic societies in the world, and New Zealand has got a huge reputation for its the diverse nature of its parliament and its representation. So they're coming for a steer on how they can deal with the issues that we've already dealt with.
Are they also interested in our electoral system and MMP?
A lot of them are interested in how it's working. A lot of them have realised that first past the post isn't actually working for them as much as it can be desirable if you're in government, and could be absolutely undesirable if you're in opposition. They recognise that having that MMP has delivered for New Zealand a very representative parliament, and so they want to know how they can achieve similar things. For instance, if you look at the Pacific Islands, they actually recognise that they've got a huge shortage of women MPs, and it's very difficult in the first-past-the-post system with a traditional Pacific Island makeup as to who gets to vote or who gets to decide who stands, and in essentially a village or a tribal system, very difficult to get women candidates and then get them elected. So MMP delivers that diversity that first past the post can't. A lot of countries are seeing that a proportional system, even if it's not MP, is desirable for their societies as well.
The last delegation that came was the Australian Speaker. Did he have anything to say about our question time, which he sat through?
Yeah, I sat alongside him, and he was amazed at how well we were all behaved. So within the Australian Federal Parliament, he's got a much tougher job keeping his guys in line. They're far more rough and ready than New Zealand members of Parliament are, and he was quite intrigued about pretty much how sedate the debate was, even though it was a week when it was pretty noisy from our point of view.
You were on the Land Speakers Tour from here in Europe, and you were very critical of the media coverage of it. They don't seem to have listened to you, though.
Well, I think the point that I tried to make then is that the media and the gallery can be particularly lazy, and maybe it's because they're understaffed compared to what they've been in the past. But they know that there's a calendar of events that come out. They know that every year there's going to be a delegation, and they're going to write the same story every year, which says it's a complete waste of time. But they've never been on a speaker's delegation, and they've never seen what goes on there. And I've got some big issues with that. In a similar way, too, they know that every 3 months there's going to be the parliamentarians' travel costs and expenses released, and they're going to write a story about who spent the most on travel and then speculate as to whether or not that was a good spend of taxpayers' money. It's a pretty lazy way of reporting, and if they really want to get their head around this issue in a fair way, then they would accompany a speaker's delegation and report on it appropriately.
This time, the controversy seems to have been stirred along by one of your own, the ACT MP, David Seymour.
Well, I don't think it's surprising that David would take that stance. I mean, he comes from a party which has done that before. It seems to be their core principles around government spending. But this is a guy who's grown up in think tanks in Canada, and has learned what he's learned either by online research or reading books. The fact is that to be a decent parliamentarian, you've got to get out and speak to people, and you've got to form relationships. And just to give you an example, you know, if people think that John Key could have achieved the same relationship with the United States by playing some virtual game with Barack Obama over the internet, as opposed to walking around a golf course and having a discussion one-on-one, or if he could have had the same relationship with the Queen by not going to Balmoral but by ringing up and having a phone call, then they're wrong. The fact is that politics and diplomacy is about face-to-face contact, and I think David's got a very shallow view if he thinks that all politics and all diplomacy can be conducted online.
Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows talking to Tom Fruin, and be sure to tune in next week for part two of that interview, in which Mr. Burrows talks about the transition from being a minister and shares some insights on Question Time.
Rhys Lyon, once again with the House adjourned, leaving us with nothing new to report. We revisit Question Time in search of answers and even some free entertainment. Sometimes they come together when the questions are being asked by New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters, also now the MP for Northland. He had put down two questions in the last week of the last sitting period, both for the Prime Minister, the first on Tuesday, asking Mr. Key about the government's appointment of tax expert John Sherwin, a former chairman of PricewaterhouseCoopers, or PwC, to lead an inquiry into the law governing foreign-owned trusts in New Zealand.
This question to the Prime Minister and asks, does he stand by all his statements?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Yes.
Supplementary question.
Supplementary question, Right Honourable Winston Peters.
When he said that Mr. Sherwin was independent, was he aware of his Westpac Banking Corporation, Australian-owned bank settlement of $2.2 billion to IRD, which they had attempted to evade in terms of taxation?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, I wouldn't want to agree with the member's characterisation, but yes, I'm aware he worked on the issue.
You were. Oh, great. Supplementary question.
Supplementary question, Right Honourable Winston.
When he made the appointment about his expertise, was he aware of the Penny and Hooper case where the Court of Appeal and Supreme Court dismissed Mr. Sherwin's evidence as being inappropriate from an expert witness?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I wasn't aware of that particular point, but I would say this, that John Sherwin has been highly respected across the tax industry in New Zealand. He's been chairman of PwC. He is someone that was given an award in either the Queen's Birthday or New Year's Honours. And frankly, actually, when it comes to financial expertise and knowing what he's talking about, he runs rings around that member.
Order, point of order. Order. Mr. Speaker, my question was about a case in 2010. Either he was aware or not aware, and after that he should have been stopped.
Order. It's a point of order. I wish to hear it in silence.
Right, Speaker, when the Prime Minister said he wasn't aware, why then wasn't he stopped from rambling on about something he wasn't asked about?
The Member makes... Order. The Member makes a reasonable point. As I've mentioned many times in this House, I'll determine when I think an answer's gone on for too long. Further supplementary?
When he made the statement
supplementary
about...
Supplementary question, the Right Honourable Winston Peterson.
When the Prime Minister made the statement about the expertise of Mr Sherman, was he aware of how his so-called expertise on form over substance on the wine box allegations conflicted with the Privy Council, the Court of Appeal, and the full High Court of New Zealand?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, I'm aware of John Shewan's complete integrity. That's not something I'm sure of when it comes to every member.
Next question.
Order.
Have you been looking in the mirror?
Order. Order. Order.
The Speaker, David Carter, acknowledged a point of order from the Shadow Leader of the House, Labour's Chief Whip, Chris Hipkins.
Point of order, Chris Hipkins.
Mr Speaker, there are reasonably clear rules and have in the past been enforced reasonably clear rules about questioning the integrity of other members in the House, which stops members from doing so for very good reasons.
Yeah, and on that occasion it wasn't addressed at any particular member that I took it. Further? Point of order. Point of order. Chris Hipkins.
Mr Speaker, in which case it was directed at all members, in which case I take offence.
Okay. On the basis that Chris Hipkins is offended, I'm going to ask the Prime Minister to stand and withdraw the last part of that answer.
Sorry, Chris.
Order. Question. Order. 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 The Right Honourable Prime Minister will now stand and withdraw it correctly without any addition.
I withdraw.
Supplementary question.
First to catch Mr Carter's eye was the ACT Party's member for Epsom, David Seymour, who you will recall we last heard about from Chester Burrows.
David Seymour, supplementary question.
In what century did the wine box inquiry take place?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
One so far back I can hardly remember it.
Very, very sad, eh?
Order. Order. Supplementary question, the Right Honourable Winston Peterson.
Why did he tell the Paul Henry show yesterday that he was taking a paper to Cabinet that morning proposing the appointment of an international tax expert?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Because I did.
Supplementary question.
Supplementary. Order. Order. Supplementary question, the Right Honourable Winston Peters.
So what happened to the international tax expert? Did he turn you down?
Well, he didn't turn me down, but the Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, the member can come into the House and abuse and beg Mr Shewan if he wants, but Mr Shewan has a glittering career. I'll get him to reflect on his own.
Supplementary question? Point of order, Speaker.
Order.
Point of order.
Order.
Mr Speaker, why
order.
Is point the Prime Minister
order.
Allowed...
Point of order, the Right Honourable...
Mr Speaker, why is the Prime Minister allowed to lace up the end of every inferior answer with an epithet or insult?
I invite the member to go back and equally look at his question, where he finished his question by saying, did he turn you down? Supplementary question?
What insult was that?
Supplementary question, the Right Honourable Winston...
Is this highly independent John Sherwin... The same John Sherwin at National's Caucus Party held at Premier House hosted by the Prime Minister.
If there's any ministerial responsibility, the Prime Minister.
Probably, and so are the Parliamentary Press Gallery and many other people. People love coming to a National Party function. It's a lot of fun. You used to be the cheerleader amongst them,
order.
Winston.
Point of order, once again, why is the Prime Minister... allowed to get away with an end of an answer like that over and over again?
I suspect, if I was applying the rules very strictly, the question was out of order and asked an issue that, for which there's no Prime Ministerial responsibility. It's a party matter.
The Speaker was then taken to task by Labour's David Parker.
Why is it that you allow a question, presumably because it's in order, and yet when challenged as to allowing out-of-order replies, always... flick the complaint away by saying I shouldn't have allowed the question.
Order. I'm happy to try and help the member. I didn't say I shouldn't have asked the question. I said a question strictly wasn't in line with standing orders. Now, I can start, if the members want me to apply it very, very rigorously. I suspect it would not be to the advantage of the opposition, and I suspect after a relatively short period of time, members would wish that I didn't do that. But in that particular case, given the question the way it was asked and the answer the way it was given, I was satisfied that it was within the bounds of the rules.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, can I just, before I take any further points of order, if it's in any way relitigating the decision I've made and the answer that I've given...
No, it's a fresh point of order. It's a fresh point of order, sir.
Fresh point of order, the Honourable David.
How was the question out of order?
Well, I thought
because
again,
it was about the
order.
Prime Minister.
I'll try and explain it. The issue was about the attendance at a National Party function. Well, as I heard it, it was, and that's the... Order. Order. Further supplementary? Supplementary question, Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Can he confirm that Mr. Sherwin was a long-standing partner and chairman of PricewaterhouseCoopers New Zealand, the same accounting firm that was directly implicated in the 2014 LuxLeaks scandal?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Answer the first part of the question, yes, and the answer to the second part of the question, no, I don't know what the member's talking about.
Supplementary question.
Supplementary question.
This one's for table.
Right Honourable...
Is he aware of the connection between PricewaterhouseCoopers and Cayman Islands organisations and companies and trusts and one Quran Trust Company, Cayman Limited? Is he aware of that?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaking, no.
Supplementary question. Point
of order. Right Honourable
Mr. Speaker, I seek to table relevant documents that relate to that last question of the Prime Minister, where he appears blissfully unaware of what's
order,
going on.
Just explain the documents.
Well, you won't find them around.
Order, just explain. Order.
This is a corporate record and register not available for public inspection, which I seek to table.
Leave us to table that particular corporate record. Is there any objection? Is there any objection? There appears to be no objection. The member can table it. Question number 8.
Next day, Mr. Peters was back with question number 5, again for the Prime Minister, and with his now standard opening gambit.
This is to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by all his statements?
Order, the Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes.
Any question?
Supplementary question, Right Honourable Winston Peters.
How could someone from PwC qualify to review our foreign trust disclosure laws when PwC's association with Tegel New Zealand saw that company generate revenue in New Zealand of $562 million, yet pay only 0.38% tax in this country?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, PricewaterhouseCoopers will know more about tax than that member ever will.
Order.
How could someone, Prime Minister...
Order. I just want the member to have a fair go. There's too much interjection.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Right Honourable Prime Minister. The Right Honourable Winston Peters. Supplementary question.
Mr. Speaker, to the Prime Minister, how could someone from PwC qualified to review our foreign trust disclosure laws when PwC's association with Rio Tinto saw that company generate revenue in New Zealand of $76 million, yet pay only 3.6% tax in this country?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, PwC is a worldwide recognised one of the top five firms in the world, and the members and managing partners of it, I think, are generally recognised for their expertise. Mr. Sherwin actually is an international expert. I think his capacity is beyond reproach, and any feeble attempts by that member to denigrate his personality will be seen what they are, bitter and twisted but not
order,
accurate.
Order, order. Now moving a bit.
What happened to Mr. Nice John?
Order, supplementary question. Right.
Here we go.
Mr. Peters.
Prime Minister, what would qualify John Sherwin to do the job that the public is requiring now, or to his description of being an expert, when he has been heavily criticised by the Supreme Court of New Zealand, the Court of Appeal in New Zealand, and his views were dismissed by a court as high as the Privy Council in London?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr Speaker, many people criticise that member and some people still listen to him.
Order. Order.
Speaker, this, as you well know, is not about me.
It's about him. It's about him.
Order. Order. When I... Order. I know it's not about the member, but when I consider the tone of the question in the first place and the way it's levelled at a person who's not in the House to defend himself, I think it's the answer given was not one that I would have given, but on this occasion I'm going to rule it as satisfactory. Point of order, Right Honourable Winston.
Mr Speaker, I have made these remarks about Mr Sherwin outside the House. If he doesn't like them, his recourse
order,
is to sue me.
Order, that is not a point of order. That is not a point of order. Further supplementary? Supplementary question,
he can serve, he doesn't like
Honourable
it.
Winston Peters.
Prime Minister, why does he not see how preposterous it is to put up someone who has very recently been advising the Bahamas government on how to set up tax-free foreign trust structures?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr Speaker, the genesis of the reason why John Shewan and Don Brash were sent to the Bahamas is because the Bahamas Prime Minister asked me about the successful introduction of GST in this country, going all the way back to the introduction under the Labor government, and because they were looking to implement a similar policy. I thought the expertise of two experts in this area, Don Brash, who had done an enormous amount, and John Shewan was a sensible thing to do for international diplomacy, and I stand by that view. I'm glad I sent those two gentlemen and not others I could name.
Good question.
Supplementary question, Right Honourable
Prime Minister, speech. Cards on the table of the 70 leaders and heads of state mentioned in the Panama Papers. Is he one of them?
I didn't actually hear the question. Did the Prime Minister hear it enough to answer it?
Here we go, Mr. Prime Minister.
Order. No. Speaker. Order. Order. I didn't hear it, but if the Prime Minister heard it enough to answer, then he can move to answer. Prime Minister.
I've already previously made it clear I've no dealings with Panama.
Point of order.
Mr. Speaker, my question... Order.
I'm having difficulty hearing the member, particularly when there's a continual chatter here.
Point of order, Right Honourable Winston. My question is not whether they had any dealings in Panama, but it was of the 70 heads of state and leaders mentioned in the Panama Papers, which are to do with transactions all around the world.
Order, the question...
Is he one of them?
Order. And the question was then answered by the Prime Minister. Maybe not to your satisfaction, but it was answered. If it's a fresh point of order, going to continue to now raise points of order and disagree with the decisions I'm making, I will be asking the member to leave the chamber.
Well, I'm not going to be bullied out of here, Mr. Speaker.
Order, order. If the member now wants to speak to a former point of order to assist... Okay. Then the way forward then is the Prime Minister's now saying he didn't hear the question, nor did I, because of the level of noise here. Order, no... The way forward is I'm going to have the question asked again. The supplementary question, please. Right
Prime Minister, of the 70 leaders and heads of state mentioned in the Panama Papers, is he one of them?
Oh, the Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, no, but I won't hold up a sign saying that.
Order, order, no, order. The question was answered immediately.
The Speaker, David Carter, ending that three-way stoush between himself, the New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters and Prime Minister John Key. Now, looking ahead to next week when Parliament resumes on Tuesday at 2 p.m, here's the Deputy Leader of the House, Simon Bridges.
Mr Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday, 3 May, the Government will look to complete the Appropriation 2014-15 Confirmation and Validation Bill, third reading of the Building Earthquake Prone Buildings Amendment Bill, and make progress on a number of other bills on the order paper. Wednesday, 4 May, will be a Members' Day.
And on the Members' Order paper, there are two bills from Labor MPs, one aimed at preventing privatisation of Kiwibank and the other at bringing in minimum standards for rental properties. Both have a history of support from the combined opposition parties, defeating the government by one vote, 61-60. So some excitement ahead on Wednesday, possibly. I'm Tom Fruin, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.